Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Hi Dan.
Tom, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Very well.
We double helloed then. How are you doing this week?
All right.
It felt a bit weird this week because we haven't played on a Monday for a while, I think. I felt a bit skewed to have a whole weekend's worth of fixtures and then we kind of like tail-ended it a bit. Did it feel like that for you?
It was nice to have a weekend off.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that, yeah. A welcome break. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay.
I don't really have a huge amount to say on it.
Oh, boy, yeah. We got an hour to fill. welcome this week, Oliver Young, Miles. Oliver, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Thank you very much for joining us. Do you want to give us just an idea of who you are and what you do?
Yeah.
Because we don't do this sort of research beforehand, so...
It's on the running order, mate. Speak
I don't
for
read
yourself.
The running order. No, Oliver, tell us.
Yeah, so I'm freelancing at the moment for Sky Sports and the iPaper, and I used to work... for Squawker a couple of years ago.
Okay, that's quite a good back catalogue, I would say.
And crucially, you are a Spurs fan, right? If not, we've made a horrible mistake.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be here.
For my sins, yes.
Yes. Did you go last night?
I didn't, thankfully.
Yeah,
I've been a few times this year, but managed to swerve last night.
It seems to be the general consensus of last night that there was a lot of people missing. It was generally quite a...
Yeah. Looks very empty.
Yeah, definitely. Patchy, I would say, definitely. But there was quite a few people that kind of felt it was warranted, I suppose. You were there, Dan, weren't you? Did it look empty? Did it look like an end of season game in a 90,000 seater stadium?
It felt like an end of season game in terms of atmosphere. It was really flat. And the Watford fans definitely outsung the home fans. I don't really know if Watford have a reputation for being like really good on the road. I don't know much about Watford.
The team certainly not.
It's quite random chants, like
a lot of Arsenal,
a lot of pro Wenger stuff.
Yeah,
I suppose it's designed to sort of annoy Spurs, but yeah, atmospherically felt flat. I actually like the only person who thought it was quite an entertaining game actually.
Right, okay.
It was really, like, low on quality.
You're a journalist, so you have a grasp of words.
Yeah.
What do you think entertaining means? Because I'm starting to worry a little bit.
Like...
Because it was scrappy, or because it was...
Like, it was no one... Put it this way. For what it could have been, Watford are on 38 points, and I think they probably need just one more point to guarantee... survival. I think 39 would definitely do it. I think 38 is probably going to be enough anyway. So they really could have come to Wembley and just tried to frustrate Spurs and just been ultra defensive. But actually they came and played a kind of 4-2-3-1, sort of 4-3-3 hybrid thingy. Put Gray up front rather than Deeney for a bit of pace and to have a go. They supported him with Hughes and Richarlison and that other bloke. his name I forget. And actually, they had a bit of a go, and they got their tails up in the first half, had three or four shots. They had a goal ruled out after bringing on Deeney and De La Feu, who was quite sharp and missed loads of chances. And it could have easily been a 2-2. It could have been a 3-0. I don't think it was a terrible game entertainment-wise.
Yeah,
I think it was flat.
We're Spurs fans, aren't we? And I suppose that... As from a purely fan point of view, it was horrible.
Yeah, I get it.
You described it as dreadful on Twitter. And
yeah.
I think it was being
well, kind. Actually, that was in reference to Sissoko's shot a few minutes before when Kane slipped him in and he blazed it over the top. But yeah, no, it could sum up the game as well, really. But it was quite a drab watch. But I can see where Dan's coming from as well. Watford did have their chances and they really should have taken one or two. Richarlison won. Sort of midway through the second half, if he'd scored that, which he should have done, that would have opened it up a lot. And yeah, it was interesting. Watford had more shots on target than Spurs last night, which you wouldn't really have anticipated beforehand.
Expected goals. Yeah. Through the roof.
Yeah, exactly.
We were dreadful in defence, though, weren't we? I mean, again, to bring it back to a purely Spurs point of view, it was probably entertaining for a neutral to a point. But for us, at this stage of the season, after the month that we've had, or the three to four week period that we've had with City, Brighton and the semi-final, I don't think we've had a home game since... Is it Huddersfield? Sorry, before City. I mean, it feels like a long time since we had a normal home game against just someone who's a of this planet, not Man City.
I think it was three straight defeats at Wembley, actually.
Yeah, which
sounds wrong, but
was after Huddersfield. Yeah, I think you're right.
Juventus, City,
Man United.
Yeah. It was after Huddersfield, Juve.
Yeah.
So that saw that stat on Twitter. Before the game, I thought, that can't be right. But then actually, it is.
Cause yeah, it does sound
there,
a bit.
There was such a run of away games.
Yeah, bizarre to have had 2 months where we've only had, you know, what we've had out of it. And it was only like an international break in there and stuff, wasn't it? I think it kind of added to the atmosphere a little bit, just that I think there's an exhaustion now. And there's also an exhaustion with Wembley, definitely. I think we're getting towards the end of it and thinking, well, we've done this and we've had a couple of really good games, but a couple of heartbreakers as well, and I think we're kind of done with it a bit.
I think as well there's still that sort of hangover lingering from the United game. I think if Spurs had sort of flown out the traps and started really positively on the front foot and made a sort of exciting start to the game, that would have lifted the crowd a little bit, but it just sort of started flat and stayed flat throughout, and I think that sort of impacted the crowd a little bit, and it kind of felt like an end of season dead rubber when it obviously wasn't. It was still quite an important game, but it kind of just drifted from start to finish.
I think I was going to say Neville made the point on at half time, I think, for Ali's celebration, and said that it wasn't aimed at Ali. I think it was aimed at the crowd and the team. It was a bit kind of mooted, and it was almost
Wasn't it a Fortnite celebration?
Yeah, but that was
not
Ali.
That I know what Fortnite is at all. But
Ali did it, but he was like, none of the defenders went over and celebrated, and it was the noise of the crowd was like when we scored our first against Rochdale, for example.
Right.
Finally, lads, come on, let's like go and get nine. And it's not quite that easy, is it?
It was sort of like as if Spurs thought the gap to Chelsea was still 10 points, not 2 points. So it was obviously quite tight, and it would have been pretty grim to lose that game. But I agree with you about the exhaustion thing. I think Spurs just kind of need the season to end, I think. I think if you compare it to last season, after losing the semi-final, there was still like the finishing above Arsenal for the first time in forever, and the White Hart Lane farewell, which was always going to be really emotionally charged and really kind of electric, and then there was the point to prove about finishing the season strongly of the year before last. And I think this year, after the semi-final defeat, that there's kind of none of those elements, and it has just kind of gone flat. And I think there's nothing really, yes, there's top four, but there's nothing kind of really driving the players to reach those high standards that they reached at the end of last year.
I wonder as well if maybe Wembley has played a part in that.
Totally. And yeah, exactly. And I was just literally running around on a massive pitch all season has probably taken its toll as well.
And
so
knowing that three of your last four are going to be there as well, it must be psychologically draining as well.
Yeah, I can't imagine that the last three games are going to be like the last three games of last season, when I think Spurs set two consecutive away win records and obviously finished White Hart Lane so strongly. I think it's probably going to be more of the same against West Brom, Newcastle and Leicester, which obviously can't wait for.
Yeah, everyone stay tuned. I mean, with that in mind, in fairness to people like Lloris, who's had a difficult April, the commentators kept saying he was dropped for the semi-final, and it seems to be this thing that's going on. He wasn't dropped, was it?
Technically he was, but we all know that that's slightly misleading.
Yeah, and that's exactly the right word. It is misleading. But with all of this in mind and thinking that there's no drive and stuff, but yeah, Kane's still got Golden Boot to get, and Lloris has had a difficult April. So those two players really sort of were the standout last night, if you like, particularly Lloris, who was man of the match. So surely a lot of credit should go to him for being kind of switched on when all others were around him, perhaps were not.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the key things yesterday that I took away from it was that moment in the first half when Doucouré was charging through on goal and Lloris just raced out of his goal and intercepted it, as we've seen him do countless times. But obviously, having taken down Sterling in the last game that he played, you know, you might have thought maybe he'd try and play it a little bit cautiously, but still, you know, it showed the belief that he has in his ability. That's the way he plays the game, and that's why he's, you know, why Pochettino loves him so much, because he brings that to the team. I thought that was quite a telling moment in sort of a game that didn't really have much to really talk about, the fact that he's obviously still confident in his own abilities and the way that he likes to play. But I think, I mean, I saw an article in the week saying that Lloris had made the most mistakes of any goalkeeper since the start of 2015-16, I think. I mean, it sort of comes down to the goalkeeper he is. If he stays on his line and doesn't rush out to try and intercept things, which more often than not is a positive thing, then perhaps he doesn't make as many mistakes. So I think the spotlight on him has been a little bit unfair. He is a top-class goalkeeper who could have left Spurs quite easily 2 or 3 years ago. I don't think anyone would have really blamed him. So I think he deserves a bit more credit and, you know, backing when things don't go his way necessarily.
Yeah, it was just a reminder last night, I suppose, wasn't it, Dan, that he's still got it in him and he's still very much a capable goalkeeper and very much a capable captain as well, I suppose.
So, yeah, I think Oliver said it all there, really.
He's, and Kane, just on that, just to move on.
Yeah, that's fine. Fine. I didn't have anything to add. Kane. Yes.
Wasn't vintage.
Yes, wasn't vintage, but he just keeps scoring, doesn't he? I liked it. I thought there was a nice metaphor in his goal that I sort of smugly worked into my match piece, which, that, you know, if sometimes you miss a chance, you've got to pick yourself up, haven't you? And he literally picked himself up to score, which was very kind of Kane. after, you know, obviously a bit of a difficult April for him, you know, people will disagree about whether it's really been that hard for him, but you know, for whatever reason, he's obviously not been his happiest on and off the pitch. But I think it's just another reminder that he'll, you know, even when he's not at his best, he will keep scoring goals and tidy little finish. Should have definitely had another one.
Oh yeah, off the post from Jan.
Well, I was thinking the offside one. Yeah, he just didn't need to go early. It was kind of,
I think that was another example of him just not being as sharp as he usually is.
Yeah, down the side
one. That's one of those where
normally he just holds his nerve, holds his line, and it's a really easy finish.
But still getting a goal out of the game as well is very, because that's, there's so many strikers that have kind of fallen by the wayside, particularly at Spurs as well, where that offside chance is kind of the one in the game where you think that Soldado, for some reason, immediately springs to mind, where that would have been his one chance. Mm. He's in acres of space and then he goes a yard early. And
yeah,
it's like, and he finishes it really nicely, but it doesn't work out. But Kane's got his 38 for the season and it's never really,
I think that's
felt
a record
like,
for him in all comps as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I think so.
So,
and he's plenty of time to hit 40 as well, which is ridiculous considering he's had, how many spells out has he had? One or two?
This year, I think it's just the one.
Just the one.
I'm getting losing track of all these ankle injuries, but I think it's just the one. And you know, I think with hindsight now, we're all saying he should have come back a bit sooner, and should have come back a bit later. And Pochettino said last night he's still kind of suffering with a bit of a hangover from the ankle injury, which is nice to kind of get confirmation of that, because I think we were all going, oh god, is this what if this is Harry Kane forever now? Like, he's just not quite as good as he was before, but he's obviously still kind of slowly taking his time to get back to his best, and yeah, fingers crossed it's for the World Cup.
I think it's the reason he got up so quickly for his goal as well is because he saw that Trippier was piling in on the right to pick up the loose ball, and that's, it's as good as a goal, pretty much, when Trippier picks it up.
Trippier loves
right
the Watford.
He loves the Watford, doesn't he? I don't think.
He absolutely loves it.
For a player that has been without a goal, I know he has got one goal, hasn't he? Scored
against Watford.
What I mean is, for a player not to score against a certain team, I don't think I've ever known a footballer to have such a hold over another football team.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
But in particular, a right back, and in particular, Kieran Trippier, of all people. It's so strange, isn't it? But he, it was a mixed performance, actually. I mean, obviously, two assists. First one, much more down to the goalkeeper than it was Trippier. You know, Dan's just poured out some skills onto the table, which is not going to go unnoticed by the mic. But yeah, he does seem to love it, doesn't he? And I think that there was a moment where he got a knock on his ankle and he went off for treatment, and it didn't look good for a while. He was getting quite a lot of treatment, but he kind of sprinted back on and he had to go from one side of the pitch to the other. So he was right by the dugout, and he sprinted all the way over to the other side of the pitch and was like ordering people about and stuff. And there's a part of me, and it's a cynical part of me, and therefore a large part of me, that believes that he might feel a bit at risk this summer. And I think that sort of attitude of playing on even when injured is so Poch, and would stick with Poch. He's got 4 games left, and if he's looking around at the squad thinking who might be out the door, stuff like that might stick with him. And I mean, fair play, it might work. It's probably perfect for him, but I just found it a little bit of an interesting point. But I mean, if we played Watford every week, then we wouldn't be looking at selling him in the summer.
Exactly, he'd be first name on the team every week.
I don't think he's under threat in the summer, to be honest. I think Aurier's surely would go first.
Well, that's the thing, the right back sort of situation still hasn't sorted itself out, really, has it? I mean, Aurier, you do have to give him a bit of time, but he seems incapable of learning. He makes the same mistake every single week that he plays. And I think maybe that is Trippier. If Trippier has a good end to the season, then he'd expect to start next season as the first choice right back. And maybe even for England, if Southgate continues to play Walker at centre back, Trippier could have a good World Cup, and then suddenly his stock's right back up again. So
sell.
Yeah, exactly. £40 million. I mean, he was skinned a lot by Richarlison as well, actually, at least 2 or 3 times in the first half, and it's definitely happening in the second as well.
Yeah, just all part of this entertaining game that you were slagging off. Fair. It was just so full of mistakes at both ends, like the defending for Spurs' first goal. When Cabaselli just runs in front of the keeper at the last minute, makes like a darting run and ducks. I felt quite sorry for the keeper. I mean, presumably called for it, but it's pretty tricky when your centre back just does that.
Yeah. Just on the goal, I thought there was a rare moment of quality in the game. I think Eriksen's quick thinking as well.
Yeah, great touch. Very
early. But Ali's finish as well is sort of thing you can snatch at.
Very concise.
He's now on. I think he's now nearly on 10 goals and 10 assists.
Eriksen is on 10 in double figures.
Yeah, I heard this. So I put a tweet out yesterday, which must have been wrong, because when I was watching the Man City West Ham game at the weekend, and I'm sure they said it was Sterling and Sane, and they said this, that one of them's the first to reach double figures for both goals and assists. So whether I've heard it wrong or they're wrong, and it's almost certainly the former. I don't know. But
is it just Prem for those two? Isn't it? Because Sterling did it at the weekend as well.
Right,
so I'm not sure if that's it. Maybe.
I think Eriksen was the goal that Kane took. God, I don't want to talk about this. I need to mention it. Was the goal that Kane correctly and non-weirdly at all claimed Eriksen's 10th of the season?
Quite possibly. I don't know.
I don't know. Obviously, he's had a good season, hasn't he? Well done, Christian.
And Ali as well, which is the main point, really. It's,
I thought Ali was actually a kind of island of nice touches and quality amidst a sea of rubbish last night.
But entertaining rubbish.
Entertaining rubbish.
That's going to be the title of the pod.
I loved when angry Dele came out, though, when it was he got blown up for offside or something just in front, just in Watford's half, and he just booted it.
He went for goal, didn't he?
Yeah.
Good lad. Yeah. Well, you don't get booked for that anymore, though, do you? They changed it.
What? Because a Watford player did it.
They changed that about 5 years ago, mate.
What, kicking the ball away?
Yeah, you used to get booked for it, and now it's just like...
I've seen it happen. It's dissent still, isn't it?
I think refs turn a blind eye, to be honest.
Fair enough.
Would you remember when unless it's like... The guy, the opponent set the ball to take a free kick and you boost it into it.
Do you remember Van Persie got sent off at the Nou Camp?
Yeah.
And the whistle went and he booted it.
Perfect.
And it sort of bounced over his shoulder. And this is when he's playing for Arsenal, and he has a go for goal. And he's like 40 yards out, so he's not scoring it. It's not his right, but the whistle goes literally half a second before he hits it. So, but the ref just sends him off for a second yellow. It's brilliant. It's just pure.
I can't remember that.
No, it's about when he was at Arsenal,
it was
5 years
ago. One of those last 16.
I should remember.
Yeah, I think it was his last season there.
Well, I mean, during the period where I just refused to watch Arsenal, but
against Barca at the Nou Camp, it was always comedy, pure comedy.
Yeah.
Now that is entertaining rubbish. Let's talk about Dembele, because he went off injured last night, which it seems to be getting a little bit more common for Dembele these days. Sam Walters at SammyG_92. What are your thoughts on the ineffective Dembele-Dier partnership? Do you find it as mind-numbing as me? It's interesting that, because three years ago, it was very close to being a title-winning midfield for us. So, and obviously, you know, players do degenerate, but Dembele in particular does look to be, well, for a start, off in the summer, talk of China, but his body is breaking down a little bit more rapidly.
That's been the case for the last couple of years, though, hasn't it, really? I mean, end of last season, start of this season, he barely ever made 90 minutes. They'd always haul him off after 65, 70. If the game was won, Dembele would be first player off.
Mm.
So it's not a sort of new phenomenon, I think, really, with him. But, yeah, they need to start planning for life without him. They probably have been for the last 18 months, I'd say, because he is so influential to Spurs when he's on it, but the problem with him is just he hasn't been, fitness-wise, he hasn't been on it as much as Spurs would have probably liked. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to replace. He's so unique in terms of what he brings to a side in centre mid, and his style of play is just...
Do you think it's as simple as Harry Winks doing a like-for-like, or would you rather see Winks promoted to get Dembele's minutes, if you like, and also us replace... sort of backstocking almost.
I think it would be a big risk to just rely on Winks, because he's another one with his own injury problems. Mm. His ankle issues are pretty worrying when you consider how young he is. And he just hasn't seemed to be able to shake it. I think they need to bring a centre midfielder in, really, a box-to-box player, to sort of fill that Dembele role. I mean, as I said, you can't really replace him with someone like him. No one has that sort of brute strength yet. Ability to just waltz around players like he does.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast, indeed.
Exactly, he's one of those. So, a box-to-box player, I think, in the Dembele mould, but maybe not quite as good.
Do you agree with that, Dan, for starters? Do you replace him, try and look for like-for-like as much as possible, or do you...
Because I've got many things to say.
Okay,
To answer the question about the Dembele... Delhi? Mm. He's not involved in it, is he?
Delhi buyer.
Delhi buyer. What is
Dembele Dyer?
Portmanteau of Dembele
Dyer.
To answer the question about the Dyer partnership, doesn't work.
Sounds a bit hard.
Dembele Dyer partnership. I have forgotten what I was going to say. I think...
You had so much to say.
Yeah, I did have a lot to say. I think it's very good, but I think possibly... It's kind of representative of kind of where Spurs are as a whole, really. I think it's really good up to a point, but it's probably not like an elite centre midfield partnership.
Mm.
And I think most of the time you're fine with it, and I think it's fine against Watford, really. I mean, they were both off colour a bit last night, I think. Obviously, particularly Dembele, who didn't look fit from the start. And you know he's not fit when he loses a physical 50-50. Especially when it's to Will Hughes in the first couple of minutes. So he really didn't look fit.
I think Dyer feeds off of Dembele's form as well quite.
Yeah, they do work well in tandem. And I think when they're both on it and they're both flying, it's got a little bit of everything. And it's a really great partnership for the Premier League. But I think this season, it kind of got a little bit exposed against Juve.
Yeah.
I think that they showed it up in the second leg. Dembele was obviously unbelievable in Italy, and I think, you know, even against United in the semi-final, you know, again in the sort of high stakes matches, I think United found a way to sort of play through it, and again Dembele wasn't really fit for that one. I don't think he hurt himself quite early on, didn't he? So I think it is one of those partnerships that's kind of representative of where Tottenham are. Like, how do you improve on that, really, without spending a hell of a lot of money? But it could probably do with being improved.
I'm still not convinced by Dyer in that role. I just don't think his passing is accurate enough to be in that sort of position for a team that controls possession like Spurs do at that top level. I mean, even yesterday, he has this sort of the same tendency that Michael Dawson used to have when he gets the ball. His first thought is just... ping it out to the left wing, and it just goes a fraction over the head like one too many times, I think. I mean, the Wanyama Dembele partnership last year I thought was the best partnership in the Poch era, definitely. Those two were just formidable when they were both fit, both on form. I would pick those two over Dembele Dyer any day, but Dyer seems to be a constant in Poch wherever whatever the system is, he'll play.
Do you think then Dyer needs to be supplemented in centre mid, or does he need replacing? And it sounds harsh, but I mean, if you to say if you're unconvinced by him there, he's probably the best squad player, perhaps even in the league, let alone just at Spurs. Yeah. You know, the amount that he can do and where he slots into teams. But if he's not of the required standard, is it about finding a balance to sort of supplement his skill set, which is are more defensive? Yeah. Or are we looking at overhauling the whole midfield this summer?
Potentially. I mean, what I'd quite like to see is a midfield three, station Wanyama or Dembele at the base, Eriksen sort of dictating it, and then a runner on the other side. I'd quite like to see how that would work. Mm. I mean, look, Dyer obviously has his uses. I think last season he was great because when Poch wanted to change from a 3-4-2-1 to a 4-2-3-1, he was perfect because he could move up or he could drop back. But I just think this season where he's been playing in that midfield role, he's kind of just become a little bit redundant, I think. You know, he hasn't really pushed on, I don't think, from 2 years ago when he emerged in that position in the first place. I wouldn't get rid of him, but I think Spurs need to overhaul that central midfield area and maybe get two in. But, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens this summer, who stays and who goes.
This is it. You said, talking about spending a lot of money in a certain position, but you'd argue that we don't really need to spend it up top, perhaps. I mean, we score enough goals. We probably need some reinvestment in the defence after Rose and Alvaro go. But if we're going to be spending the bulk of our transfer kitty, then that's where you'd spend it, isn't it, I suppose, in centre mid?
Yeah, I think you probably would. And
but on who, I suppose? Is
yeah, that's the yeah. question. Yeah, I agree. I think that, and then possibly the fullback area as well, and maybe Dyer's long-term future is at centre-half. I kind of agree with Oliver again. Like I think there's a really sloppy pass last night that Kapu, I think, intercepted, and then Gray had that chance for Watford, which Lloris saved. And against better teams, like Liverpool, for instance, when he kind of gave the ball away really sloppily and Salah punished him, I think against better teams, that kind of thing will get punished. And I'm slightly worried about him if he does end up in that midfield role in the World Cup. I'm kind of slightly worried about him being the guy that just sort of casually passes it to Isco in the quarter final and sort of wrecks everything.
So I
can see where you're coming from. I think just to go back to Dembele a minute. I struggle to sort of buy this, like, he's falling apart narrative, really. I mean, I think in February he played 3 games in a week against sort of Liverpool, United and Arsenal, and he was the man of the match in all Juventus. Three.
Yeah.
And then played Juventus. He's obviously got something wrong at the moment, but I don't feel like he's any worse now than he has been for the last 2 years, really. He's always had this foot and ankle problems, and it seems to come and go, and he needs to be managed. And I think he probably wants a fresh challenge. He's got a year on his contracts. I can really see why Spurs would sell him, but I don't sort of buy that he's completely falling apart. I think Spurs could do what they did at the end of last season, which was give him a break after the semi-final.
I think part of the problem
probably be back.
Part of the problem with that is them being able to rotate him with Winks, have they? I mean, he's burnt out basically Dembele because he's had to play every week.
Yeah.
In an ideal
yeah,
world,
exactly.
Winks is fit and Dembele's fit, and they can just sort of switch them around because Winks, albeit he's not as direct, well, he's not as good with the ball at his feet as Dembele is, but he brings similar qualities to the side, and they haven't really been able to switch them up in that
sort. Yeah, with Dyer, there's an obvious alternative in Wanyama, in Dembele or Winks. The only alternative has been Sissoko into playing in a diamond, and he's bad at football, so it's difficult. He's a bad footballer. He's a very bad footballer. It's weird that he remains as a footballer. Pochettino pre-match comments, Spurs victims of our own success. He suggests that we're 4 years ahead of schedule.
I think that's a bit misleading. He didn't actually say that. He kind of...
You wrote it in running order.
I did, yeah, I did.
Absolutely.
I was paraphrasing. just so I could correct you.
Yeah, you
so I love to do at least once a pod. No, Tom, you're wrong there. He certainly suggested Spurs are ahead of schedule. But I think, you know, people, he said something along the lines of the plan was to kind of arrive in the Champions League in the new stadium. But I'm not... Yeah, I mean, I think to say that he definitely said Spurs are 4 years ahead of schedule is probably a bit unfair, but... yeah, he said victims of their own success, and it kind of goes back to a comment he made about a year ago now, which I think is one of the most important things that Pochettino has literally ever said to sort of describe Tottenham's evolution, which was that he said that the team had developed quicker than the club, and that was causing a lot of problems. And I think now that's true more than ever, really. And he sort of repeated that before the game, and that was part of his message, that really... we weren't supposed to be here, is what he was saying. You know, we were never supposed to be in this position where we were challenging for trophies now. We were supposed to be in a position where we were moving into the new stadium with Champions League football, and then it would be a time to start challenging. Mm. But we, you know, as a club, Spurs got there, you know, 2 years ago, and they started that shock challenge to Leicester.
Yeah, God, it still sounds weird, doesn't it? Just, yeah.
Come up a lot recently. It's just like
we were the shock in that part.
Keep talking about it
in that scenario. Yeah. Oliver, do you agree? I mean, is it something that you thought about as a? Because the thing is that when you consider where Pochettino was when he came in, where Spurs were when he came in, his first job was firefighting. That was he had to rebuild a house that, you know, AVB and Sherwood had kind of burnt down. So his remit was to steady the ship, if you like, and we came fifth in that first season, didn't we? Is it fifth?
I think it was
sixth.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, was it fifth?
Yeah, I think he was fifth. I think it was just ahead of...
Because he finished sixth the Sherwood season.
And we United seventh.
Yeah.
No, that was the season before. Yeah. So that was, they got fourth,
and I think
I think we probably just about hit par, if you like. Mm. I said there about the next season, the Leicester season, and then the season after. I mean, you can kind of argue that if we didn't leave White Hart Lane last season, then we could have had second sewn up by now. You never know. So that, for me, doesn't feel like a team that you can describe as ahead of schedule. That is a team very much not fluking their way through these seasons.
Yeah.
Coming fourth, hopefully, or top four now, I mean, does it... To say that, it feels very easy for Pochettino to say that now. Kind of, we've limped over the line of top four, if you like, this season, gone into the new stadium. But there were times, you know, this stage last season, we were still talking about being in the title hunt.
Yeah, I think he does have a point, though. I think people sort of lose track of where Tottenham should be on the back of what they've achieved in the last couple of years. Spurs are still pretty much sixth in the table when it comes to what they can offer players in terms of wages, what they can offer clubs in terms of transfer fees. So when you're looking at it in... base financial terms, Spurs are still overachieving, and a lot of the players he inherited were very sort of, you know, they needed a lot of work done, and he's managed to extract, you know, their abilities to their fullest. So, you know, I think he is right in a certain respect, but the problem is once you get to that next level that he took us to, inevitably the expectations increase with that. You know, when Spurs challenged Leicester and then challenged again last year, you know, everyone just expects them to keep going up and up and up, and eventually there is a ceiling where they can't quite push through, and we've seen that a little bit this season. The Champions League aside, which was great, the team really, you know, obviously came a long way in that competition. The rest has kind of sort of halted a little bit and maybe even regressed slightly. So it's been tough, but I think he is right that, you know, that expectations surrounding Spurs are a bit high based on what they've done the last couple of years. And it seems that everyone wants to knock Spurs as well. It seems like Spurs are that club that Arsenal hate the most, Chelsea hate the most, West Ham hate the most. You know, everyone likes to sort of revel when Spurs aren't doing as well as they have been the last couple of years, but I think it's slightly unfair, really.
Success breeds contempt, I suppose. Yeah. It'd just be nice if success was a bit more than what it was, I guess. Mm. I mean, Pochettino took over a team, again, just to bring it back to that those early stages of Pochettino's Spurs career, but there's seven first-team players that are still at Spurs from when he took over. So you look at Lloris.
Done your research.
I've literally counted it as we were talking. You've got Lloris, Vertonghen, Rose, you know, for how long he's going to be here. Lloris, Vertonghen, Rose, Dembele, Eriksen, Kane and Lamela. And they're all very, very much part of the first team, if not the absolute world, you know, our world class 11, if you like. So, and then with, there's a bit of a feeling of revolution this summer, perhaps, going into the new stadium. You know, we've come out the back of a really grueling season where we probably have underwhelmed a little bit considering the season before. I mean,
I think considering Wembley,
it's been done very well. Don't get me wrong, it's been fantastic, but I think what promised to be in February to where we are now, perhaps, you know?
Yeah, I suppose so.
So does it really, feel like this is the end of a cycle or a Pochettino cycle? Is it, are we looking at this summer being a 4 out, 4 in sort of?
I sort of hate using this term because it's already been thrown around a lot in the last 2 weeks since the semi-final, but I do think it's a bit of a sort of crossroads period for Spurs, because it just feels like the same can't happen again next year. Like, it can't be just another season where it's promises so much by February and then no silverware but a top four. It feels like there has to be a notable progression, and I think this year was As Ollie said, maybe there's been a slight step back, but I think that's kind of mitigated by the Wembley move and not playing any home games. And it'd be really, really unfair to say, oh, this team's regressed or gone backwards. It just wouldn't be right. So next year, I think there just has to be some kind of notable step up. And that basically means winning a trophy. Mm. And whether Pochettino himself feels that he's taken the team as far as he possibly can in the kind of current financial climate, or, you know, with the shackles on, is a question that's come up this week, because he has made this me and another comment many times, and surprisingly in the pre-Watford press conference he sort of didn't back down from it and just explained, like, this is a project that will outlast me as manager and that's inevitable, which I think we should, yeah, Spurs fans should be pleased about, because the problem with the club previously was it was flip-flopping from kind of, you know, a Harry Redknapp, Tim Sherwood type to a sort of continental director of football model, and it didn't seem to really be a consistent project. And I think what Pochettino was trying to say is, you know, the club knows what it wants to do now and knows where it wants to go, and that will be a long-term thing whether or not I'm here. Yeah, you just feel like, you know, what does Poch do now to get to that next level, to win a trophy? And there are things he could do, like prioritise the League Cup, for instance, or whatever, but it maybe feels like he just needs a bit more investment that I think he was saying in those comments basically isn't going to come.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the new stadium's not going to change the financial reality of the club overnight. Money's not going to rain from the skies, I think it was his direct quote. So, you know, what does he do, really?
What does he do? I mean, it's
going to be a big summer.
Yeah.
Big summer, yeah. It looks like there's going to be a rebuilding job at Spurs. I mean, as we've said, the last few summers, there haven't really been any suggestion that anyone would leave, apart from the speculation about Walker in the last season. But we're heading into this summer with Alderweireld, Rose, Dembele, pretty much guaranteed to be going. So when you're thinking about players coming in, that's immediately three players that have got to be replaced. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they do it. I mean, I guess in some sense they can take solace from, you know, from the likes of Napoli and Roma, who've sort of revitalised themselves after losing big players and still been competitive. So maybe that is something that Spurs can sort of look to and be, you know, hopeful that.
And Atleti.
Yeah, exactly. Atletico,
I mean, it can be done, but you've just got to hope that the club can get the right players in, which in the Poch era they haven't necessarily always done. You know, it's probably been 1 in 3 have been successful, really, in the signings that have been made in the Poch era. So
I think that's actually fair. I haven't really thought about it before. I think that was a stick that was used to beat Poch and behind Spurs, I suppose.
It was put to him on Friday.
Oh, right.
Walker game, that the recruitment hadn't been good enough and that was the area they needed to improve. Mm. And he basically refuted it and said,
I mean, interesting.
It's been as good as
other clubs. 6 or 7 first teamers that Poch had when he first took over, and the rest are Pochettino buyers. It's Sanchez and Trippier, Davis, Dyer, Son and Dele Alli. Dele Alli, you can argue, but
Alderweireld.
Yeah, it's.
But then if you look at that spine, Lloris, Vertonghen, Eriksen, Kane, Dembele, that's sort of straight through the middle of your team. Usually a manager comes in and they sort of build that team from the centre and then move out, whereas at Spurs seems to be the other way, which has been quite interesting to see. And yeah, I don't know, we'll see what happens in the summer, but it's definitely a huge, huge summer for the club.
Yeah,
especially as well. Sorry, just to touch on, I mean, the whole transfer window thing, you know, with that moving 3 weeks forward, if that had been in place last year, Spurs wouldn't have bought anyone. So how Daniel Levy and Pochettino and Steve Hitchin, how they deal with having to bring in players earlier with the World Cup going on as well, will be another interesting thing.
Exactly what I was about to say.
Nosebleed, isn't he, Levy, for having to do something in late July?
Well, Poch said he wants to get players before the World Cup as well. So, actually, I've suddenly realised it's May and the World Cup's next month.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's supposed to be fucking going. Yeah. My visa and stuff. So, suddenly, from the end of the season to the start of the World Cup, if Poch is true to his word, and I suspect part of it is to apply a little bit of subtle pressure onto Levy, you know, if Poch is being straight up, then it's like a month to do most of the business. Mm. And yeah, that Spurs usually take about 4 months to get anything over the line. Even like Juan Foyth, it's like, right, we'll negotiate for as long as it takes. So I think by the start of in the next 6 weeks, we might have a good idea about, you know, whether Pochettino is going to be backed to the hilt, shall we say. And it would be a little concerning if the business was all left very late again, just because he's made it so clear that a fast start is one of the things Spurs can do to close that gap to City. And early business and clever business is one of the things Spurs have to do to be competitive, to remain competitive against the top six rivals.
Let's do what Liverpool did in 2002 after the Japan-South Korea World Cup and just buy anyone at a decent tournament. I'm well up for that. It'd be interesting.
I think he's literally sworn against doing just that, I'm afraid.
They all have now. Everyone's boring now. They used to be the best bit about World Cups, just seeing
It was quite a comedy approach, but it's not one I really advocate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's easy for us to say as Spurs fans at the time in 14th in 2002. Slightly different now, I suppose. Anyway, move on. Before the World Cup, we've obviously got three more games. First of which is West Brom, last away game of the season. They start the day with a chance of safety. Still, the great, great, great escape. But they could literally be down by the end of the game, even if they win. I think if Stoke win, they're gone. And Stoke or Palace or something like that, or Swansea. I know there's loads of games that
Stoke
would be tight. Stoke, Palace, Swansea. No, sorry.
A bit confusing because I think Swansea have still got to play Stoke and Southampton, haven't they?
Yes, it's a bit of a weird. I mean,
and I think West Brom need Swansea to lose both.
Yeah, I think so because it's there's a couple.
So they need. They sort of need Swansea to collapse. And they need to win their last two, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way. West Brom will have motive, certainly. They always do seem to against us. But they are bottom of the table for a reason. And would you take any satisfaction out of relegating them as a Spurs fan?
No more one-all draws next year, which would be good. It would. But it's one of those. It's become a much tougher game than it would have been even 4 weeks ago. Darren Moore is beaten Mourinho. He's got a point against Klopp. And he's beaten Rafa Benitez, so he's done pretty well.
Two goals away from home as well, actually, yeah, isn't exactly. it? Yeah, fair play.
Exactly. So, and they drew Spurs at Wembley earlier in the season as well, didn't they?
Gary Megson's one game in charge.
God, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I think you've got a point though. You know, they're going down with a fight. It does look too little, too late. And even if they do get something against us at the weekend, which you know could happen. It does look too late for them, and say particularly no matter what they do, I think they could still go down regardless of anything that they get against us.
I think as well. I mean, the players seem to be massively on board with Darren Moore as well, and they seem to be playing you know, to try and get him the job in some respects. I think just because he's the complete opposite to Pardew, who they obviously all hated, they're sort of playing for him and they're getting results through that way. So this will be, I think, another game where they'll be bang up for it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it'll be tougher than Spurs would have wanted. But yeah, they should still go down, and frankly, they deserve it for ruining Nasser Chadli's career, which is a really horrible thing to do.
I forgot about Nasser.
I think it's the Watford game is going to be really vital. Obviously, 3 points aside, but I think that before going into a game like this, we did need a bit of a livener, if you like, and that's what felt like.
A sharpener.
Despite
gin and tonic before you go to the pub.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Get you on the road.
Reef. It was a reef. The yellow shirts just kind of remind me of it. It's one of those where, regardless of performance, we got the result, and next time it can be a little bit more about playing slightly more, let's say, expansive football or trying to get back to our best and back into momentum.
Well, I wouldn't count on it. I think the Watford game was... sorry. I think the Watford game was always going to be a bit sluggish, kind of coming after the semi-final. And I think the important thing on Monday, and it'll be the same on Saturday, sounds a bit cliche, but just to sort of make sure Spurs aren't sort of out desired, really. Because you know what I mean? Like,
Sherwood.
I know.
It was
well,
pure
lit lads.
Did you see Sherwood on? Sorry, just to interrupt with something completely different. Did you see Sherwood on?
Rinsing Lewis Holtby.
Lewis Holtby. But I totally am with him with that as well. Like, I really am. He did. Holtby used to just tear around, kind of doing loads of thumbs up and like loads of running about.
I watched the clip and there was actually something quite kind of. That I quite admired about the way Sherwood destroyed him with a kind of very casual smile on his face. well, seemingly being nice, but it was just brutal. It was just like, yeah, he's a nice lad. Yeah. He used to do X, Y, and Z, and it was an assassination, but with a smile on his face.
Yeah, it really was. Sorry, that just came to mind when we mentioned
that. No,
it,
that's but, quite right. I was making a boring point about that I don't even believe in myself, to be honest.
Okay.
But I think that what I'm saying is Spurs are going to have more quality than West Brom, as they did Watford. And as long as it doesn't come down to a kind of...
Passion
itself, I think that there shouldn't be too many problems. But I think... You know, as United found, you know, if you're just not up for it, really, they're going to be up for it, obviously. And it will be a difficult sort of sell for Poch, I think, because I think the Watford game was really vital and Spurs rode their luck at times. But they've taken a big step toward fourth place now, and I feel like Chelsea had
Liverpool
a bit of
Sunday
the lead.
Well.
Yeah, they've got Liverpool. It could be...
Draw would be nice, isn't it?
I kind of wouldn't mind Chelsea just... I've got confidence in Spurs. Well, it depends on the Saturday results.
Yeah, I mean, a win takes us third as well. That's something else to remember.
Yeah,
Do play just... the next game. And if they don't beat Chelsea, then I don't think they can go above us.
I think, unfortunately, as we found out a couple of years ago, I don't think players are that fussed by third or fourth, really.
Probably.
Especially now you don't have to do the Champions League qualifying. Yeah. So it is just about making sure there's kind of... a level of motivation to match West Brom's and then it should take care of itself on paper.
West Brom have been bastards to us in the past. You mentioned the one-all draws, and I think there was four consecutive one-all draws or something like that, one of which obviously very terminal for the end of the Leicester season. It was the Chelsea result that put the tin hat on it, but I think not beating West Brom at home was... that made it almost certain that we weren't going to be getting anywhere near.
I was trying to remember that. Was that before the Chelsea game?
It was the first of our three Monday night fixtures. No, it was the second of our three Monday night fixtures. We had Stoke and won 4-0. Then we had West Brom and I think a Jan Vertonghen own goal equaliser. And that was it. And we were flat out.
Yes. The rim.
Oh, yeah.
And then we went to Chelsea with it needing a win to stay in it. You know,
it was at White Hart Lane as well, wasn't it?
It was at White Hart Lane. So, I mean, and they took a lot of... I do think they took Pulis as well with a back
they loved it. They loved
back
it.
Line of McCauley and Dawson and just like just the gang of bastards that they've got that all kind of merge into one footballer that you couldn't recognise walking down the street. But yeah, they do love spoiling, I think. But yeah, we need to be on our game, I suppose, don't we? Do you have a favourite or least favourite West Brom memory from the Premier League?
It's got to be that title one, but there was another one. We Poch's first season, we lost at home to them 1-0. And it was a James Morrison. Yeah, he was the manager, yeah. James Morrison header in the 6-yard box. Yeah. I was looking at that team earlier and it was Cabool and Kirikez, I think, were the centre backs.
Kirikez.
Yeah,
so that was it. Yeah, possibly. Yeah. Very possibly at right back. This is what I was saying about Lloris. I mean, he had to deal with that for a whole season.
Yeah,
so let's give him a break.
Well, he had to deal with the season before that when it was actually that guy we signed from Standard Liège to annoy Man United.
Zeki Fryer.
And it was worse, wasn't it? It was Norton Fryers. Kapoo, I think, played centre half
against Liverpool when we got spanked 5-0 at home.
Literally the best striker in the world up front.
And we played a high line, and it was very high. I believe Norton asked to be taken off about 30 minutes into it as well, which this is when Norton was playing left back quite a lot. Yeah.
I've got a good memory of just a classic Sherwood. Weren't they 3-0 up at half time?
They were 3-0 up in 15 minutes.
And Spurs came back to 3-3.
Yeah, they were 2-0 up in four minutes. There's a clip of, I think it's Nathan Clark, who used to be talking Tottenham tactics. There's a gif of Chadley playing central defensive midfield. I think this is where the meme comes from, of him playing central defensive midfield. And he kind of receives the ball and tries to spin in the centre circle. And he loses the ball and West Brom go on the attack. And it's funny, in and of itself, that is a funny clip. And then you look up at the score and it's 2-0 and you think, oh, for God's sake. And then you look slightly to the left of it and it says, like, 4 minutes, 3 seconds. You're like, what happened at this time? This was, I mean, it does feel like a bit of a dream now, doesn't it? But
horrible, horrible dream.
Very, very strange. Yeah, that was, it was 3-0. And that was Kane's possibly second Premier League goal. I think he scored a header in that game and Eriksen equalised. I mean,
you've got great memory. I couldn't tell you your scores.
Wasn't entertaining, can you?
Who got the third?
I think Kane got the second. Eriksen got the equaliser. Yeah, Adebayor's probably about right. Could have been.
He was in favour, wasn't he?
He was in favour.
That's a punt, but a good punt. Yeah.
He was scoring for fun at the end of that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I looked at the players to have scored 10 and assisted 10 in the Premier League in one season. I think Eriksen has done it this year because I saw it. We'll find out after the watch, everyone.
Someone will tell us.
But I think the last player to do it was Adebayor.
Really?
He got 17 goals and 11 assists, I think, in the ABB. Under.
Is that a Redknapp?
I think under Redknapp.
When he was on loan playing for a contract.
Yeah, I think it was boosted by, I think, the Harry Redknapp We Want You to Stay game against Newcastle. He got a hat-trick of assists for Louis Saha, who got a hat-trick.
And a goal he scored as well.
And a goal, yeah. So he really... Yeah, I don't think his assist levels were great until Newcastle strolled into town. And
Those were the days.
Those were the days. Hopefully we get one more of them before the end of the season. All right, let's wrap this up. Oliver, thank you so much for joining us. Where can we find your body of work?
So I'm on omiles90 on Twitter. And then occasionally Skype... covering Spurs v West Brom actually on Sky Sports this weekend, so that'll be pushed out if you see that.
Great stuff. Dan, the usual platforms for yourself.
Everyone knows where to find
me. Everyone knows you. Everyone knows you. Thank you very much for joining us. We will see you next week, but bye. I always mess that up,
yeah,
don't I?
Yeah, you can mess up, yeah.
Bye.